When people start to talk about work from home and telecommuting and just the fate of the workplace moving forward, the real big question is, what's going to happen to commercial real estate? That's why we invited Ryan Rauner to join us on the show today. Ryan is an associate broker with Real Markets. Real Markets was actually the number one team here for Century 21 in Virginia last year, and actually number five nationally. I was really excited to connect with Ryan for this episode, mostly because we haven't talked in a while, but also because no one has networked for a while. And if you know Ryan Rauner, it's probably from networking. Anyways, we really hope you enjoy today's episode.
You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses.
Helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
Ryan Rauner, thank you for joining and welcome to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast.
Thank you, my friend. Great to be here. Thank you.
Hey, we really appreciate coming in because, you know, right now we know that there are definitely some interesting things going on in the real estate market. And before we get into that, though, I want to kind of go back and ask you, you know, in your career, what's been kind of a pivotal moment for you in the real estate market?
So I would say the first pivotal moment, and I started my career in 2008, right as the Great Recession was crashing on us, and I was sitting at my desk. And I realized that no one was going to put a deal on my desk to work. I was thinking, you know, I was caught in that 9-to-5 mindset. Just give me the deal. I'll work it. You know, great. And I was sitting there and I said, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to go out and actually generate my own business. And so to generate my own business. And so what does that look like? Am I going to hit the phones and hammer the phones? Cold calling? No, not me. So I started going online, chamber events and stuff like that, and putting them on my calendar and going and joined a BNI, all that stuff. So I just started getting out there and it was awesome because I realized, you know, my father was the president of a bank, business bank. And, you know, we'd go to dinner and we're walking at a table and, oh, hey, Harry, you know, someone knew him. And I always thought that was so cool. And, you know, this allowed me the opportunity to kind of be like my dad, meet people, know people, get involved in the community. And get business out of it. So it was a win-win-win.
I mean, I think that's the first thing I'd start with is, you know, anywhere I would go, and I wouldn't get out a lot, but I would just see you there, right? So, I mean, you were an established member of nearly every group in Northern Virginia. So let me ask you this, you know, have things changed for you in recent years in the terms of the way you approach the market? You know, how are you?
Changed quite a bit. When I started dating my wife in April of 2017, you know, all of a sudden I knew she was the one. So that, I think that always changes a man and how you look at life. You start wanting to create a life, a family and stability. So, you know, that stopped a lot of my networking. We'll just put it that way. But also joining Real Markets and my partner, Stephen Carbell, having listings to promote is a great way to stay top of mind with people. I would be out all the time. And I loved being involved in charity organizations, professional organizations, but people knew me as the charity guy, knew me as the, you know, the tower club guy, and they didn't necessarily associate me with commercial real estate, certainly not as much as I would like. So now it's much more, you know, well, let me say, initially it was just the marketing emails for the properties that we had for sale or lease. Then at the end of 2018, I started my blog. You can get there, ryanrauner.blog. Sale or lease. Then at ryanrauner.blog. And that was a great mechanism to not only stay in touch with people, but to show my expertise and to provide useful knowledge. You know, what's a cap rate? So many people talk about that, but they don't really know. And maybe you're afraid to ask. So just a short article explaining that and getting out there, providing useful information to people and branding yourself as an expert has been awesome. I always brag about our marketing process. It is the best, hands down, in the business. I've never seen another firm that does a better or more comprehensive job marketing properties. And I can say that because I didn't develop it. My partner did. So I'm very, very fortunate to have been able to inherit a tried and true marketing process. he has a background in auctions, foreclosures, bankruptcy work. So he gets work from the trustees, from banks. And, you know, if you're going to auction a property, you have to widely market it so that you do get as many buyers as possible and you do the best work for the bank and for the trustee. So he developed it over a number of years, you know, marketing lists, stuff like that. Email is very powerful, but that has been tremendous. And I would say, yes, it's the best. But what's crazy is that it seems like so many people just don't even do, they do the minimum, right? They're not even willing to go past the minimum. You'd be surprised how many listings don't have a floor plan. They don't have any information on the property. They don't have any photographs. And it's just like, you know, do I really need to waste time in my day emailing you, calling you to get something that you should have done already? And it's really frustrating. What we do is we create a property package. It has a flyer. We write a, you know, couple paragraphs or whatever on the property, extolling its virtues and selling the property. We sell the property. It contains floor plans, professional photographs, zoning information, county records, tax records, condo documents if it's a condo, a financial analysis, you know, and we want to give buyers, tenants, whoever, all the information they need to make a buying or leasing decision. Again, it's surprising how few brokers do that.
You want to talk a little bit about your shop and where you fit today, and again, like where you focus.
Sure. So when I joined my partner, Stephen Karbelk at Real Markets, as I mentioned, he had he sells properties. And so that allowed me to add that to my service offerings. And that also then resulted in having something to market. So as I mentioned, transitioning from, you know, in-person marketing to that digital marketing, that was very, very powerful to stay top of mind with people. So got on the sales side as well. But then about a year into my stint with Real Markets, I pursued and obtained my CCIM, Certified Commercial Investment Member designation, which really, I think, was, well, the second game changer. And that is, I mean, you have to take coursework, advanced coursework on financial market investment analysis. So that allowed me to look at real estate from a much broader standpoint, but be able to dig into the weeds. You know, just something as simple as showing someone the true cost of occupancy and showing how that compares to the cost of leasing comparable space. So most commercial transactions are leases. Much, much fewer are compares to the cost of leasing comparable space. So most commercial transactions are leases. Much, much fewer are purchases. But depending on your business, it might make sense to purchase something. So having the analytical tools to help clients really understand the decision they're making has, I certainly think it sets me and all CCIMs a step above.
Well, and I'll tell you, that's a big reason why we wanted to have you here. So we wanted to get a good feel for where are we today? I mean, we're recording this on July 2nd, 2020. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah.
Don't know if anyone's going anywhere or doing anything. But, you know, let me dive right into the elephant in the room, which is, where do you see things today, macro, micro, et cetera? And then where do you see it tomorrow? So where are we in the near term and the long term in all of this?
That is that's a big question. We're in a mess. We're in a big mess. Call it a quagmire. Call it limbo. The government drove up for you can't open your business. Not much is moving right now. Investors are sitting on the sidelines because they're waiting for great deals. I mean, you know, it's sad, but there's going to be a lot of bankruptcies and foreclosures that are coming up. So a lot of people are probably waiting in the wings to pick up a heck of a deal. You know, pennies on the dollar. Tenants and you know, owner users are also, you know, hesitant to make a move. Some tenants are moving because your lease is up and your business is still running. But, you know, let's say an owner user, I've got a flex condo for sale in Chantilly. It's a great property, signalized intersection, retail exposure, but, you know, it's 2.39 million. And, you know, even at 10%, that's $240,000 you got to come out of pocket. In times of economic uncertainty, you don't want to be cash poor. You still got to pay that mortgage. So who's going to really be willing to make a decision in this environment? The good news is it is temporary. People are making kind of silly decisions in the interim, and maybe it makes sense in the interim, but I don't see a whole lot of impacts of this, at least from the way that we function. And I can go through the different asset classes in more detail, but I do think this is temporary. Clients say, hey, this might be a great opportunity to get a heck of a deal. You know, our rental rates dropping, our asking rates dropping. I mean, no, not really. It's been since March. It's been one quarter. And landlords are smart enough to know that this is temporary and they're not going to make long-term decisions based on a short-term crisis. They're not going to allow tenants to lock in a below market rate for 10 years when they, you know, anticipate this thing probably being over maybe in the next year at most. So yeah, there's that. Oh, one other thing that I like to say, and you know, what's going on is this whole 25% open thing. You can't expect people to pay 100% of their rent when they're only allowed to open their business 25%. So it's just a mess right now. How about that? It's just a mess right now. And our job is to get through it as best we can.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of different things I want to dive into a little bit more on what you mentioned. So, you know, one of the things is people standing on the sidelines and probably sitting on some cash, right? Just as many people are sitting there sitting on cash because they need to have cash reserves. And just as many landlords and, you know, sellers are sitting there saying, no, I'm going to wait because I know what it was worth in March and I want to get that again, right? So when it comes down to timing the market versus time in the market, you want to talk to us a little bit about that in terms of where you see values going maybe over the next 6 to 12 months when all this is over.
So yeah, I can kind of do that. So let's talk about three asset classes. I won't include land. We got office, retail, and industrial. Industrial is doing great right now. Okay, they're doing fine. There's, you know, you have 5,000 square feet. I mean, the most industrial is much larger than that. But even say 5,000 square feet, you might have five people working there as opposed to 25 people working there in an office. So industrial is just not as hard hit. You're making stuff. You're not really interacting. Retail, that's going to have some long-term really interacting. Retail, that's going to have some long-term impacts. So Amazon completely decimated product-based retail. You know, a lot of like the Best Buys and stuff like that, they probably own the buildings that they're in and leased it back to themselves for long terms. I don't see Best Buy and product-based retail making any large scale investment decisions or large scale, you know, leasing decisions. So it went to services. So, you know, 5 years ago, I didn't know what the hell Orange Theory was, but up until February 29th, I think this year, we had a leap year. Up until February 29th, they were probably the most desirable retail tenant. Everybody wanted an Orange Theory in their center. Well, maybe Starbucks, but Starbucks is a pain in the butt because they hand you their lease and they tell you what's what. But now this COVID thing has completely decimated the service-based element of retail. You know, who's going to restaurants, you know, or at least restaurants operating at 25% capacity can't pay 100% rent, like I mentioned earlier. It's on the market. I don't necessarily see it coming back in a while, but I do think retail in this area has been greatly overpriced for way too long. But that is also a function of construction cost and land cost. So, you know, developers have to have a profit margin that they build into it. So when you buy the land for X and it costs you Y to build it, then you have to charge Z in rent in order for it to be, you know, for it to make sense. So, you know, retail rates are going to have to come down and, you know, probably rethink retail and how it works, you know, not to get too far into it, but just as an example, think about malls. You go to malls anymore? No. So what are they going to do? I mean, you know, I think hotels and malls, you know, we call it food courts and restaurants. You want to create a place for people to congregate. What the hell did this pandemic do? Now we don't congregate anymore. So a big mess. Retail is going to be hit the most. But retail landlords are pretty stubborn and they bought it for X and again, need to charge for it to make sense. So what may very well happen, depending on how well capitalized they are, you're going to see a lot of retail, you know, some retail centers that are going to, you know, be trading on, you know, an auction basis or a greatly discounted rate because all these retail tenants are going out and the landlord can't pay their mortgage anymore. So hopefully that, well, I don't want to say that, hopefully that happens, but if that does happen, that will open up the possibility of being able to charge lower rents that make more sense for some businesses to open it up. And I'll touch on office. So telework. They've been talking about telework for years, since I started in the business now 12 years ago, okay? It ain't gonna happen to the extent that people are saying it's going to happen, all right? I like, you know, I had a home office, I still do now, but I rented a make office. It's like WeWork in Tysons because I wanted to get out of the house. I needed that separation. So I do think there's a lot of value there just from a mental health standpoint and a productivity standpoint. And also a lot of people just need that, you know, we need human separation. So I do think there's a lot of value there just from a mental health standpoint and a productivity standpoint. And also a lot of people just need that, you know, we need human interaction. And sometimes some people need to be monitored. They need to be managed. So I don't think telework is the way of the future. That's ridiculous. You know, open floor plans, collaboration was all the rage, you know, maybe 5-7 years ago. And then people said, yeah, you know what? It's actually really nice to have privacy, so I'm not bothered. And so office, you know, more office-intensive environments came back. That's probably what's going to happen. One of the nice things about the WeWork, not model. I could talk about that for a while. The model's unsustainable and it's ridiculous. But I had a 60-square-foot office. It was fantastic. I had a desk in there. I had storage stuff. And then I shared a common area kitchen. I think you might see, you know, office users going to that, smaller offices, and instead of cubes to, you know, compensate for the social distancing and, you know, germ phobia. Tenants are going to need more space. So landlords are going to have to lower their rents so that it makes sense. So, you know, if you had 1,000 square feet and it was $20 a square foot, so you're paying $20,000 a year, but now you need 2,000 square feet for these social distance measures. Well, you know, you're not lowering the rate to $10 a square foot, you know, to make up that difference. But the rates will have to come down to compensate for that. And, you know, this open floor plan thing really, you know, is it lower density? It sounds counterintuitive, but, you know, it increased the density. So you could fit more people into a smaller spot. You know, back when I first started and, you know, traditional commercial real estate, you would estimate 200 to 250 square feet per person. Now, not everyone has a 200, 250 square foot office. We're talking about sharing hallways. We're talking about sharing conference room, kitchen, and, you know, open space, kind of sort of that thing. But that was an easy estimation. When they're moving to these cube farm things, you know, with smaller cubes, now you're at 150 to 200 square feet per person. So really allowed you to pack that. But I think you'll start seeing it going back to more 200, 250 square feet per person, more office. And again, when tenants have to take more space, the landlords are going to have to meet them, maybe not halfway, but somewhere in the middle in order to get them to lease. It is at the base a demand and supply issue. So rates will probably go down, but a greater trend in office is a consolidation to metro accessible submarkets. So areas like Tysons and Reston now compete with the Roslyn-Ballston corridor, as does National Landing, which is Crystal City, Pentagon City. You know, Roslyn-Ballston used to be the bee's knees, just used to be, you know, the top dog in Northern Virginia. And now you can get newer buildings in Tysons and Reston, more proximity to Amazon and Pentagon City and Crystal City for, you know, a discounted rate. Newer stuff, nice for a better rate. And so, you know, what's the motivation to be in the RB corridor? It was metro accessibility and proximity to DC. Metro is the ultimate equalizer. And so there is a move towards that, but that's going to spell bad news for, you know, more suburban submarkets. I live in Oakton now, but I was for a very, very long time. It's right down the road. Fair Oaks. So Fairfax Center, as opposed to Fairfax City, really Fair Oaks and Fair Lakes. You've got, you know, these older buildings. They're still nice, but Mantech was in them for 20 years. Northrop Grumman was in them for 20 years. And then they leave. I don't know if you've ever been in government contractor space. They were single tenant, which means that you didn't have to have a common area that would separate the individual suites and provide access to bathrooms. So the cost of multi-tenanting these buildings is large. It's really high. And you have to have rents to justify that. Well, how low can you lower your rents to make a non-metro accessible submarket appealing? And even with a five-year lease, let's say you're 20 bucks a square foot, easy math. Let's say it takes 100 bucks a square foot to multi-tenant a floor, okay? One, you have to know that your lease, let's say you're 20 bucks a square foot, easy math. Let's say it takes 100 bucks a square foot to multi-tenant a floor, okay? One, you have to know that you're going to get all those spaces filled up to make that investment decision. But then if you can only charge 20 bucks a square foot, I got 25, well, you get 25. But if you're netting 20, then in 5 years, you've paid for the cost of multi-tenanting that floor and nothing else. So a lot of these submarkets are going to be very, very hard hit more than others. So yeah, that's a lot. That was a fire hose. Sorry about that.
Now you brought up so many great points, and I know that we'll be coming back to different points that you made. One of the questions that I had was from, like, yeah, I know you work with investors. How does an investor look at a pro forma right now? Like, how do they know how a lease or is going to perform for them, knowing that some of the contracts are shorter right now and no one's really signing long-term leases, or, you know, just the change in real estate right now?
But I have had to address it in deals. So thank you. I'm going to use two examples. So one is a multi-tenant industrial property I just sold in Chantilly. Many of the rents were under market. and many of the leases were expiring in the next year to 2 years. Okay. Conventional wisdom says the longer the lease term and the higher the rent, the better. Okay. So this property seemed to, you know, fly in the face of both of these, just, you know, traditional, this is how it works. In that scenario, what you look at is, okay, well, they're under market and they're ending soon and they don't have renewal options. What does that mean? It means this, I can sooner get a market paying tenant into that space. So let's say the rent, some of the rent's called $6.50 a square foot. Well, if the market's $9.50, that's $3 that you can increase that rent and you bump your net operating income up substantially. So, you know, in that case, what's the risk? It's actually less risk than another property because, shucks, I want this tenant to go out essentially so I can release the space sooner and bump up my net operating income. So you kind of have to look at it from a, you know, each case scenario. That one, again, was very interesting. COVID notwithstanding. So we're not going to factor COVID in because that was that threw a monkey in the wrench or something like that, whatever. So that was one situation where you kind of look at it that way. All right, you know, what is it? Is it undervalued now or is it overvalued? If people were paying above market, it's really important to understand what the market rent is and is that tenant paying above or below or at market rent. A current situation that I have, it's a ghost kitchen. That's the new term. I just learned it, so I've been using it quite often. It is a fully built out commercial kitchen in an industrial property in DC. And it's rented to two tenants that it used to be a food incubator. So it was like over 100 like chocolatiers and, you know, bakers and all these different businesses with rent space like a Regis in this commercial kitchen. The owner was like, you know, can you imagine the administrative hassle of over 100 businesses per month leasing space? So he basically just said, I'm going to lease it to two tenants and then just get out of this thing. So now we're in the COVID world. Oh God, how do we look at investments? Are these guys going to be around in a month, 6 months? You know, what the hell is going on? At that point, you have to look at the tenant. You have to look at demand in general, and you have to look at the specific tenants. One of these tenants is a meal delivery company. Do you think they might be doing better now? And funny enough, my mother-in-law, my wife and I just had our baby May 8th. My mother-in-law, so we wouldn't have to cook, got us meals delivered. It turns out the tenant in this building that I have the listing for is the same company that we're ordering our meals from, and they're delicious, and it's great. But a tenant like that is going to do well in this adverse climate. So they're certainly going to do good, you know, if the economy goes back up. But you have to look at trends moving forward. You know, commercial real estate, yeah, in general, what sort of retail tenant would you want right now? You know, what sort of business would you say, I'm confident that they're going to be okay now and in the future? It's tough. So you have to look at the way things are going. E-commerce is huge. That's one reason why industrial is doing so well. You know, it's all last mile delivery, distribution centers, that sort of thing. So when you're looking at investments, you have to look at the tenant, you have to look at demand. Again, it's a crazy situation here, but you have to consider your disposition strategy. And people make mistakes. There's five questions when you're looking at an investment. It's not five questions, pardon me. It's when does the money go in? How much money goes in? When does the money come out? And how much money comes out? So when you're buying something, you have to look at what it's going to be worth to be selling. And as a last example, with a friend of mine, he's a plastic surgeon. We just purchased an office condo. So many products, office condo products on the market now were built back in the day. They're old, tired looking. They kind of look like townhouses. Now, about 67% of statistics are made up on the spot. Let's say 40% of all buyers for office condos are going to be medical because of the large infrastructure costs that go into it. Dental, especially. You got to run all that plumbing. You know, even medical, where it's just, you know, a sink in every room. Plumbing is very expensive. So they'd rather buy. They don't want to improve someone else's space. Actually, I was working with a dentist just recently. Her lease renewal came up and the landlord's got her. You know, her previous broker negotiated the renewal option at the greater of the then market rate or the escalated rate. Well, the market is about $9 a square foot cheaper than what they're requiring her to pay. But does she want to move? No, because she spent, you know, call it $1,000 building out the infrastructure of that space. So going back to the purchase, doctors and dentists like to buy. you have to be ADA accessible, Americans with Disabilities Act. So if you're a second floor walk-up office condo, good luck. Who's going to buy that in 5 years? Who's going to buy it now? Who's going to buy it in 5 years? So whenever you're looking at buying something, you have to consider selling it at some point. And if you'll allow me to continue my rant with this plastic surgeon, one strategy to sell a property when you're done with it, but you may still want beneficial use, it's called a sale leaseback. So when my guy is about 5 years out from wanting to either get rid of it, retire, whatever, he leases the property to himself and then he sells that as an investment. So you determine the rental rate, you determine the lease terms, and then you're selling the income stream. And the value is going to be based on whatever the market cap rate is for that type of tenant, doctors and dentists. And then you're selling the income stream. And the value is going to be based on whatever the market cap rate is for that type of tenant. Doctors and dentists generally are lower than regular office tenants because they're much more stable. In 2008, banks were still lending to doctors and dentists. So it's a great opportunity and strategy for a doctor or a dentist to get out of the property, perhaps when things aren't selling for owner users, because people are always, you know, willing and interested in making money by investing in real estate if they're not using it for their own purposes. So
the other big one too, though, is going back to just kind of the innovative side of businesses. So, you know, again, you think about the on-demand economy, you think about where we are today, you think about where businesses are aligning. There's going to be a lot of businesses coming out of this that are actually going to be stronger as a result of it because they did innovate, they did change, you know, they are paving the way for others. You and I are about the same age. You know, we are both the M word. It's like us and Jessica too. You know, the hard part is how do you actually accumulate wealth to buy property? You know, because you look at rates in this country, and this is flipping to the residential side, but you look at rates in this country for personal savings, they're at like an all-time low. You know, COVID actually started to increase personal savings for people. Tell me a little bit about kind of your career path. Again, you're kind of bookmarked right now between one economic recession and another. You know, tell me a little bit about that roller coaster for you personally, and what's your advice to other people out there like you?
Well, first, I will state that I am not happy. I'm furious because this was the first time in my working life where we were seeing a true economic expansion and economic growth. And I, you know, I said to my wife, it's, you know, this is the time for us to build wealth. And what does that mean? I mean, it means making more money, but you can't. My advice is don't be ant. My advice is don't be economically, fiscally ignorant. Okay. One thing. They're just printing money now. Okay. Commercial real estate is a great investment now. I'll get to how to build that wealth, but commercial real estate is a great investment. Why? Because when they're printing money, it just devalues your money. So I did some inflation count there. I watch a movie sometimes and they say, oh, he's making $20,000. It's 1985. I'm like, how the heck much is that now? It's about 1.5 times. So, you know, that's a big problem. So you want to invest probably in, sounds silly, and I don't have any interest in it, precious metals. Gold will hold its value when, you know, fiat currency fluctuates. But the great thing about real estate in general is so does that. So, you know, do you think that house that's on 1/2 acre in Fairfax that, you know, they bought it in 1982 for $150,000, it's worth $600,000 now. It didn't really increase in value. It's probably just as old and maybe they got the same carpets, but it's decreased in value. It's probably just as old and maybe they got the same carpets, but it's just because of inflation and certainly a rise in the market, but a large part of it's inflation. So, you know, you own something and a dollar's worth, you know, 80 cents in 10 years, well, your property's going to, you know, increase, not necessarily in value, but in price during that same time. So real estate is a good hedge against inflation. And also most leases have escalation clauses as well. So there's that, but you can't be economically ignorant. Like I just mentioned, you have to understand how policies will impact your wealth and your, you know, your personal well-being, whatever. How do you build that stuff? You can't be tax ignorant either. You have to understand how the tax law works. And there is, you know, nothing honorable about paying more than your fair share of taxes. Learning how to incorporate and take advantage of all the, you know, tax laws that are on the books to keep as much wealth as you can. So for example, it's called cost recovery. When you own real estate, you get cost. Called cost recovery. When you own real estate, you get cost recovery. Most people know it as depreciation. that lowers your taxable income. So you're paying less money on what you're bringing in. And that's just, you know, it doesn't really devalue by X every year, but you're able to lower your taxable income by that much. Also, interest on mortgage is deductible. It's been capped in residential, but not in commercial to my knowledge. So you're also able to use that to lower your taxable income. So, you know, owning a property, passive income is a great way to build wealth because you're not taxed at the same rate as active income. So you need to educate yourself on the tax law. You know, that's pretty simple. And, you know, when you keep more money, you can invest more money.
You think about the shift that we've seen in just, let's say, the last 5 years. You know, like you said, with the Silver Line running out Dulles Toll Road, right? So you've got businesses expanding that way. At the same time, you have individuals that simply can, for the next 5 years in Northern Virginia, remove COVID for a second. What's your vision for Northern Virginia? Like, where's the next hotspot? Where are you going to be personally? Are you still going to be here? Why is it a great place to be here, et cetera?
Yeah. So the trend that was, I mean, has been in place, but really, you're starting to see it a lot more, is a move towards metro accessible submarkets. So Reston and Tysons are now competing with the Rosslyn-Ballston corridor for tenants. They're offering newer product at less cost. The railroads are lower. Metro is the great equalizer. Another interesting submarket, and pardon me, so National Landing, Crystal City, Pentagon City, also now competing with the RB corridor. So the RB corridor can hit real hard. Same thing's happening in D.C. So you have the CBD, the Central Business District, the East End, the West End, the premier and most expensive submarkets in the D.C. metro area. Well, they're getting hit up by NoMa, Southwest, Capitol Riverfront, Navy Yard. And what did these submarkets all have in common, you know, at least NoMa, Southwest, and Capitol Riverfront? They started building multifamily. So work, live, play, mixed use. You've heard all the buzzwords. Well, that's how it's going. Another interesting submarket is called the Eisenhower Avenue Corridor. It's right around the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. You know, nice offices there, pretty relatively expensive, but government contractors need to be close to USPTO. So that's kind of a mini demand driver there. But they're not building office now, really. They're building mixed use office, or I'm sorry, multifamily apartments with retail. Why? Because they want people to move in. When people move into that submarket, then they're more inclined to work in that submarket. And again, it's all metro accessible. So what happens in the next few years, just from that standpoint, you're just going to see a consolidation around metro stations. Telework is great, but people will always, human beings are social animals, people will always need to congregate. You're just going to see it happen more around metro stations. Always, human beings are social animals, people will always need to congregate. You're just going to see it happen more around metro stations, and there will be a work, live, play component to it without fail. You know, one of the interesting things, if I could touch on another macro thing going on, is, you know, the elephant in the room, Amazon. Okay, so blah, blah, blah. We've heard it all, right? Amazon, Amazon, Amazon. Okay, well, what is that really doing? So what it's doing is you've got Amazon revitalizing Crystal City. Crystal City was how they didn't drop their rates. Their asking rates, their rental rates, in the 10 years I was in the business before this started happening, I had no idea. They're old, tired buildings. Okay, well, now Amazon's there. Why? Because you had one landlord that owned a ton of stuff, so they could negotiate a lot of leases with one landlord. It's metro accessible, highly educated population. I mean, anyone that lives in Northern Virginia knew it was going to be somewhere in Northern Virginia. Everyone else just didn't seem to know. But you've got that. So you've got National Landing is going to bring in a ton of talent to this area, tons of jobs, you know, in an area that already has one of the highest concentrations of software engineers in the world. Okay, in the world. So it's going to be even more. And there's going to be competition for talent. So that's going to raise wages and, you know, probably rents as well. But Amazon's also going to have to, I think the Arlington plan, or the deal they have with Arlington, they've got to occupy something like 5 million square feet by 2022, something crazy like that. But it's a huge economic driver there. What people don't understand or know is that, and did you know, Amazon either owns or leases, they own and lease over 1 million square feet in Herndon. Herndon is the next big submarket in Northern Virginia. Rates are cheaper than Reston. They're closer to Dulles Airport, and they've got two metro stations. And they've got a ton of nice buildings. If you've ever been along like the Sunrise Valley Drive, they're visible from the things, and they're going to be at a discount. So The trend that is moving people away from Roslyn-Ballston corridor is going to continue to Herndon. So that's going to be an extra great market. And you're proximate to Amazon again. Amazon chose that location because of its proximity to Data Center Alley in the neighboring Route 28 North submarket, Dulles Sterling. So, you know, it's a 1-2 punch. You know, Amazon is, you know, you got the tech stuff, the e-commerce from a software standpoint in Crystal City, and then you got the storage distribution, last mile delivery, you know, further west in that Dulles Sterling Ashburn area. So this area is really poised to benefit, you know, hugely from Amazon's influence. And again, it's e-commerce. I think the SIOR industrial report in 2019 called for a 10% increase in e-commerce in 2020. I've got to imagine it's even greater. So what do you need? You need more warehouse. You know, you need more storage distribution facilities. And again, Data Center Alley can go for $1 million an acre. What do? They just build data centers there. So it's like, shucks, well, I need a warehouse. Well, okay, how do you justify the cost of the warehouse? You raise rates. And so industrial is going to continue to prosper. And that area, again, Herndon, Dulles, Sterling, and Ashburn are going to be beneficiaries. It may move south behind the airport towards South Riding, you know, probably not just yet, but, you know, the path of development will continue to fill in behind that airport. But Amazon's the 1-2 punch, man. And we were, you know, again, you lived here, you knew they were coming here. But now that they're here, people don't really understand that it's an office and industrial component to the economic boom that it's going to provide.
I think it's interesting too. I mean, you think about some of the shifts that we've seen with even just One Loudoun. I mean, you talk about something rising up out of the ground, like things happen in Northern Virginia all the time, right? You just have these huge businesses, buildings, et cetera, spring up. You know, it kind of probably reminds some people of the old AOL days, right? With Amazon coming into town, just because, again, I think all the different things that are going to come out of it. So Ryan, last question for you today is, you know, are you going to continue to call Northern Virginia home? And if so, why?
Absolutely, because I just bought a house. Now, I grew up in this area. I love this area. You know, if I had ever looked at moving, it was because of the affordability of houses. You know, as we had in a conversation previously, I mentioned, you know, the baby boomers that have owned a lot of the real estate inside and outside the Beltway, you know, and in my case, the nice old lady that owned this house just couldn't maintain it anymore. She just got too old. And so we got a great deal on it. It's a beautiful home. It's the type of home that I would have wanted to raise a family in here in Northern Virginia. And I think you're going to see a lot more opportunities like that in the next 10 years. So I hope it continues to be a great place to be. It's a little hectic. So, you know, part of me envies you out in Fauquier County. I imagine it's the blood pressure goes down every mile you get away from D.C. But this is a unique in the world. I think 8 of the top 13 richest counties and cities, I'm including, you know, like Falls Church, I'm sorry, City of Falls Church, they're in this area. They're in the D.C. metro area. So, you know, good schools, it's safe, it's relatively economically insulated. It's a great place to be. It's a great place to invest. And just as the last thing to come, you know, kind of give an overview of the DMV in general, Northern Virginia's the best. We're just the best. Virginia's the best. This is the right side of the river for many, many reasons. But, you know, here's an example. One, D.C., and it took effect October 1 of 2019. They doubled the recordation tax for purchases. So, you know, it may not seem like much, but, you know, you start getting up in the millions. That's a relatively significant amount of money. So they had the highest, I think, ever dollar amount of trades that happened in the third quarter. I'm sorry. Yeah. The third quarter of 2019, because people are saying stupid double recordation tax. So, you know, I'm going to buy it now. So what's that going to do? Investment's going to move to Virginia because our taxes aren't as bad. You know, Maryland's kind of Maryland as a lifelong Virginian. I'm a bit biased towards Virginia. Maryland has a strong VC and farm, like biotech industry. So there's a lot of investment there, but it's, again, it's a tax issue. So with Amazon in Northern Virginia, and, you know, a relatively friendly tax environment, at least relative to D.C. and Maryland, you're going to see all the investment dollars coming in here. And again, if you'll indulge me, one last thing, you know, everyone wants multifamily now. Oh, I want to invest in multifamily. Okay, in D.C. you got TOPA, but, you know, hey, people just love it there. They're revitalizing, gentrifying areas and blah, blah, blah. Multifamily is getting overbuilt. No one wants to raise kids in an apartment. So when you do start seeing residential properties become more readily available, because what we have now is a supply problem, when you see those coming available, I think, you know, the multifamily industry is going to be hit a little bit. But in the more residential properties become more readily available, because what we have now is a supply problem. When you see those coming available, I think, you know, the multifamily industry is going to be hit a little bit. But in the more short term, especially during an economic crisis like this, when you're buying something at a 5 cap, meaning if you bought that apartment complex for $100 million at a 5% cap rate, that means if you paid cash, your return's 5%. Now, if you finance it, you can get really great rates through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, probably sub fours. My wife was a commercial mortgage broker for a while, but I'm not up on it as much. But you know, whenever you have a spread between the cost of financing and the cap rate on a property, you're going to push your return up. So, you know, this is not exact, but if you're buying at a 5% cap rate, and again, a cap rate means you're buying it in cash. That's the assumption. But you're financing it at 3.75%, then your return may go to 6%, you know, over the holding period, depending on what you sell it for. But if you're buying something at a 5 cap and interest rates, how much lower can you trade this for? Because if someone buys it for a 5 cap, they got to sell it for below a 5 cap, right, to make any money, unless the income goes up to increase the value. So you may just come to a situation where, you know, if the economy turns, they're not able to pay their mortgage and they're not able to dump the property for what they paid for it or more. And then, you know, then we're talking about, you know, foreclosures and stuff like that. So I think a multifamily investment, you know, you still got people that are all gung ho about it. But I just do think that people would be wise to take a step back from that and look into things like industrial, because you're going to see a resurgence, a continued resurgence, not just e-commerce. There's a little thing called COVID-19 and the American economy shipping over so much of its production to China, not an ally. So we're going to be bringing back a lot of our manufacturing and production, and great. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be great for the American people. It's going to be great for our economic stability and for our well-being. So stability and for our well-being. So I'd say look to industrial and don't get caught up in the hysteria of multifamily. It's just a fad for now. People need a place to live and it's great, but you make money in real estate when you buy it. You have to buy it at the right price. And right now, multifamilies are undervalued, in my opinion.
Well, Ryan, if people want to, you know, follow you, get some more information or get in touch, how would you recommend they do that?
Certainly, I appreciate it. My blog, Ryan Rauner's Real Estate Blog, very creatively titled. You can reach that at ryanrauner.blog, you know, ryanrauner.blog. My email address is ryan@realmarkets.com. And my number, just give me a ring, 703-943-7079. You have any questions regards to commercial real estate, happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Ryan, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Great, man. And hey, congrats again on the new arrival.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at the Nova Business.